I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron's Streetwise podcast on business and investing. Each week we hear from company chiefs and analysts about profound changes facing investors. We've heard from Disney's Bob Iger about the future of movies and theme parks, CVS's Larry Merlo about stores providing more health services, and Ford's Jim Hackett about how the pandemic might change the car business. Subscribe to Barron's Streetwise on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, April 24th. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. You might be spending a lot more time than usual shopping on Amazon during the pandemic, and you might have noticed that Amazon is offering a lot of its own generic versions of some basic and not so basic products. We now report exclusively that Amazon employees have been using data they've collected about third-party seller items on their marketplace to figure out how to develop their own competing products. It's a practice that Amazon has denied publicly for years. Our Amazon reporter, Dana Mattioli, will join us to explain in just a minute. But first, we promised she would be coming back by the end of the week, and it is now the end of the week. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, is back with us with her favorite work-from-home tech tips. Joanna, thanks for being back.
Good to be back. How have you been this week?
I've been doing well. I heard through the internet grapevine that you have a specific tip for me today, and I'm curious about this. Tell me.
That's right. Well, when we started this project, Kateri, I created a document and I listed out some of the things that I wanted to cover in terms from working from home. I gathered stuff that our readers had been interested in. You wrote in the document, how do I clean my gadgets, not just the phone, which I know you had just covered. And I thought, okay, maybe we'll get to that. We have a lot of other important things to get to, but here we are on week
7,000. Yeah, or 7,000. Yeah, depending.
And I thought this was a very important topic because we have been sitting at our desks now for a number of weeks and we might be eating lunch at them and we might be eating snacks. So it's time to clean. You got to get a good microfiber cloth and some good screen gadget cleaner. If you can't buy that, you can make your own. I've made my own. I have a spray bottle with 70% isopropyl alcohol in it. And you want to spray on the microfiber cloth and then wipe down all the surfaces. On the keyboard specifically, because that is one of the dirtiest areas, make sure that that cloth isn't too wet and never spray directly on the keyboard because the water could get in there or whatever the solution you're using could get in there. I did this for when preparing to write this tip. I dumped my keyboard over. My laptop keyboard over, and I don't want to talk about what fell out of there. So do that. Be careful. And one thing I should say is that I did a couple of weeks ago do a piece on cleaning your phone, and I did try to wipe down the phone a lot of times, like over 100. Actually, we hit over 500 wipe downs with Clorox wipes. And the reason I did this was to see if that would actually damage the screen. And it turns out it doesn't. So you don't really have to worry about Clorox wipes on your screens, whether it be your phone, your laptop, or your computer screen.
Perfect. That sounds like a great weekend project. Another thing I know I'm going to be doing this weekend is video conferencing with family. Last week, we talked about how to Zoomify your non-Zoom video conferencing apps. But we had a lot of people asking, what about Skype? So do you have any hidden tricks for Skype?
Yeah, you sort of have to feel bad for Skype. You know, they were one of the first
videos. Yeah.
Yeah, they were one of the first. It was one of the first to come to the iPhone, even before FaceTime. This was like, you know, they had invented the future. They had the future, like we were going to have video calling everywhere. And then everyone just didn't use Skype. But turns out a lot of people do use Skype still, at least for business or for talking to people because they just have this on their computers. And Skype has gotten a lot better over the last few years. On a Mac or PC, it is very easy to choose your background or change your background. You can do that when you've got the window up on a Mac or PC and you see the little video icon. If you hover over that icon with your mouse, it will say choose your background, and you can go there and you can blur your background. It gives it a sort of nice blur, or you can upload a new image just like you can in Zoom. They've added that. Another thing I really like about Skype is they have subtitles. So if you click in that same area, you can...
That feels like it's going to go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, they're not fully accurate, but they can be very funny to watch, too. But you really do get the gist of what people are saying. And it's a nice way, especially if you're hard of hearing and you're not following the conversation. It's a way to see what's being said. And also actually does a very nice job of highlighting who is talking. So it does the subtitle next to the person who's in the window who seems to be talking. You can turn this on by, again, on the video chat window on the right hand side on a Mac or PC. You'll see these three little dots, horizontal dots. Click on there and it will say turn on subtitles.
All right, one more. We know that you're a big fan of noise canceling headphones. We've talked about that before, but we have heard from some of our listeners that they can't work with music blasting, even though they really like those headphones. So do you have any advice for them?
Two words, white noise. I personally can work with music on, but I have been trying this out, and you don't have to go buy a special machine, though you can, and there are some really good ones out there for that. But you can fire up your Spotify or Apple Music and you can search for white noise, and they have a bunch of playlists and albums. Two of my favorite on Spotify, you can search coffee shops. And for those of us, okay, fine, me who misses working in a coffee shop, I used to go write in coffee shops pretty much every weekend. You can get background noise that's like a coffee shop, and you can also search office. Aww. And you'll get some nice office sounds. So if you miss the sounds of paper rustling or sort of chatter, that it might really help you.
The vending machine.
I don't know if they have a sound for that. It's actually just me angrily banging it when my thing gets stuck.
We should make one. All right. Our hotline is still open, right? Can you remind people how they can get in touch with us?
Yes. You should email me, joanna.stern@wsj.com, or leave a message at our work from home hotline, 314-635-0388.
All right. Senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern, thanks for being back. My whole family thanks you.
You're welcome to your whole family.
Up next, Amazon has been using data about independent sellers on its platform to make their own competing copied products. Our reporter, Dana Mattioli, has more. That's after the break.
I'm Jack Howe, host of the new Barron Streetwise podcast on business and investing. Each week we hear from company chiefs and analysts about profound changes facing investors. We've heard from Disney's Bob Iger about the future of movies and theme parks, CVS's Larry Merlo about stores providing more health services, and Ford's Jim Hackett about how the pandemic might change the car business. Subscribe to Barron's Streetwise on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
During the pandemic, Amazon has positioned itself as a national resource for people stuck at home. You might not always notice it when you're shopping, but there are a couple of differences in the products they have on the site. As a retailer, Amazon sells brand name items. Those are called first party sales. It also develops and produces its own products, like a house brand. That's the one side. On the other side, as a marketplace, the company allows third party vendors to sell their products. Those sales from small and medium-sized firms actually make up more than half of all sales on Amazon. Now we report exclusively that employees at Amazon have been using data they've collected about those third-party products to develop Amazon brand versions. It's a practice that Amazon has publicly denied for years, including in testimony before Congress. And Congress is not happy. Our Amazon reporter, Dana Mattioli, has been digging into this, and she joins us now. Dana, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, Dana, you spoke with more than 20 current and former employees, and you've been reviewing a lot of internal documents. What kind of data has Amazon been collecting, and how did employees use it to their advantage?
Yeah, so the results of this investigation showed that Amazon has extremely granular data on its third-party sellers that it was accessing to figure out what private label products they want to make. In some of the documents I received, it had 25 fields of information on specific sellers, everything from how many units that seller sold over the last year, how much revenue they brought in that last year, how much of a profit Amazon made on every unit sold, and how much that seller spent on advertising per unit. It's really, really, really granular.
So what are they using this data for?
So Amazon's private label business creates 243,000 different types of products, everything from batteries to baby wipes to toilet paper, right? And, you know, when they're considering entering a certain product market, they are doing research on what types of items to make. Typically how that works is, you know, you look at customer trends and data or general top sellers in a category. But what we found is in some instances, employees on the private label side were accessing individual seller data or seller data that was 99.95% from one seller to inform what products they themselves should make after that and reverse engineer some of it.
So, I mean, we know grocery stores have been having their own kind of generic products for a long time. Drug stores, we've seen this. So how is this practice different than, say, a drugstore deciding to make a generic version of a product that's selling really well in their stores?
Yeah. So the difference here is, you know, private labeling is a long established practice. To your point, CVS has a private label brand. Walmart does, Target. This is big business. The difference is that when you look at grocery stores and, you know, drug stores and the like, a lot of what they're making on their private label side is really, you know, competing with national brands. They are making, you know, their version of Crest toothpaste or their version of Bounty paper towels. Amazon's third-party sellers, which are 58% of sales on the site, are typically small, you know, entrepreneurs. So if you're accessing data on them to compete, it's a little bit different than going after like a Unilever or a P&G.
And is that data that they have access to that the drugstores or Target wouldn't have access to because of the way in which it's being sold?
That's right. So because Amazon is a marketplace more akin to like an eBay, for instance, Target and Walmart don't really have this level of data. They are sort of confined to how much product they have in their store. They're mostly retailers. They have tiny marketplaces by comparison to Amazon, who has millions and millions of sellers.
Do we have any idea how these practices could have impacted sellers along the way?
Yeah, so we have examples of two sellers in the story where I was given their data from a source. And, you know, they both remarked that, oh, this is interesting because Amazon just recently launched their own product competing with us. And, you know, a lot of times when Amazon or another retailer launches their own version of something under their private label, they tend to price it a lot lower than whatever they're competing with. So that could steal business away from whoever's product it originally was.
You're reporting that this is something Amazon employees have been doing. What has the company said about this kind of a practice?
They said that the types of examples that I've described to them in the story are against their policy. But the people that I spoke to that were committing these types of acts said that the policies and the rules were not uniformly enforced. So they really didn't see much downside or potential to like lose their job over this. And that using the data actually could help their career because they'd make better products for Amazon. One source told me, we knew we shouldn't do it, but we wanted our products to succeed. These are Amazon branded products and we want them to sell.
So Amazon has been in the middle of a number of investigations in Washington, in Europe, including for antitrust investigations, exactly for this kind of dual role as a retailer and as a marketplace. What are we hearing now in terms of the response from Congress to this new revelation?
Yeah, so actually Thursday after our story came out, a top congressional committee that's investigating technology companies put out a statement saying that as a result of our stories, they have deep concerns about Amazon and they are going to seek clarification from Amazon very shortly. And they're questioning how truthful Amazon was in its testimony in July when they were asked about these types of issues.
Amazing and incredible scoop by our Amazon reporter, Dana Mattioli. Thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to find out what you find out more.
Anytime. Talk soon.
Okay, before we go, remember, we are still taking your work from home tech stories and questions. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back with us next week to share her favorite tips and solutions. You can call us and leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. Our tech news briefing is produced by the amazing Amanda Llewellyn. Production assistance this week came from Taylor Nakagawa, and many thanks to Joanna Stern. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening, and please stay safe out there.